From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this most remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Stanton Friedman and Kathleen Martin join us. Science was wrong. Stanton, of course, a father of modern-day ufology. Here's what's happening. While BP is apparently capturing more oil from its blown-out well with every passing day, scientists on a team analyzing the flow said the amount of crude still escaping into the Gulf of Mexico may be considerably greater than what the government and the company have claimed. Captain Kelly Sweeney and I have been talking about this for about a month. Their assertions, combined with BP's rush to build a bigger cap and its apparent difficulty in immediately processing the oil being collected, have only added to the impression that the company is still floundering in dealing with this catastrophe. A lot of people have been emailing me over the last few weeks talking about how this is biblical prophecy, how it matches the book of Revelation. Nobody knows prophecy better than John Hogue, and let's turn to him. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing great, George.
Good. John, now, is there any kind of tie-in between prophecy and these spills?
Nothing specific and direct to the Gulf spill directly, but there is a common theme throughout many traditions, East and Western, that deal with a poisoning of the oceans as something that will happen in the future when human beings seem to only be interested in the material value of things, in kind of a runaway greed situation, and they're completely raping the ecology. I mean, you see this, as you were mentioning, in the book of Revelation. There are a couple interesting statements. In the seven trumpets segment of Revelation chapter 8, we have a third of the sea was turned to blood. And that theme of the world's seas being bloody is something that is alluded to in other prophecies as well. And then we look at the sweet crude of the Gulf. You look at the pictures of the streams of what's left of the tip of the iceberg of this plume, which is mostly underwater, you see what looks like as what John of Patmos said in Revelation 16, the second angel poured out of his bowl onto the sea, and it turned into blood like that of a dead man, and every living thing in the sea died. Now, that is not specific to this Gulf disaster, but one need only look at the pictures and wonder if in his trance, in his connection to whatever gave him that mysterious message 2,000 years ago, John of Patmos was looking at an image very similar to what we see as the blood of this orangey-red goo that really does look like the blood of a dead man in the waters.
Might be time for a full show with you, John. Lots of things going on that seem to tie into all these different forms of prophecy. Let's do it, okay?
Okay.
John Hogue, his website, hogueprophecy.com. Some have wondered whether BP can financially survive this disaster in the Gulf. The oil giant is, of course, a diverse international money-making machine. But the Guardian newspaper reported that BP has already spent over $1.25 billion in just 7 weeks in the oil spill, with no clear end in sight. The company will be dealing with an avalanche of lawsuits for years. As a matter of fact, a New Orleans attorney says that she expects that some local law school grads will spend the bulk of their careers working on spill-related cases for the rest of their lives. The company's stock recently nosedived, by the way. In just a moment, Captain Kelly Sweeney joins us for the entire hour as we talk about this situation. General Motors is recalling about 1.5 million vehicles worldwide to address a problem with a heated windshield wiper fluid system that could lead to a fire. Its second recall over the issue in 2 years. The recall affects several pickup trucks, sport utility vehicles, crossovers, and passenger car models from 2006 to 2009 model years. GM conducted a similar recall in 2008, but came across new reports of fires in vehicles that have been fixed. And General Motors will keep open about 900 dealerships across the country that it had planned to close. It's a shift in corporate strategy that could preserve thousands of jobs. The automaker will wind up with about 5,000 U.S. dealers in July, up from the original plans for about 4,100. It had about 6,000 when it filed for bankruptcy last year. A field trial of a genetically modified variety of potato resistant to late blight, which is a major threat to the crop, has begun in eastern England. The trial, carried out by scientists, will last 3 years. Listen to this one. A Florida surgeon who mistakenly removed a patient's kidney instead of his gallbladder has been fined $5,000. In October of 2007, Bernard Zaragoza of Coral Springs, Florida, removed a kidney from an 83-year-old patient whose unusual anatomy placed the kidney where the gallbladder should have been. This is what he says, the doctor. I was completely mortified discovering this error. It's a complication I never heard of, dreamed of, or imagined it could happen. Well, the Florida Board of Medicine took this unusual circumstance into consideration when approving the relatively mild $5,000 fine plus 50 hours of community service. The panel chalked the situation up to bad luck, with one board member saying that he would be happy to have the surgeon operate on his own family members. The patient, by the way, died of heart failure 3 weeks after the operation. By the way, say a little prayer for our buddy Dr. Morgus, who's on the mend. He had two stents placed in two arteries, and also he's battling, so far successfully, prostate cancer. Dr. Morgus. Snakes may be declining across the world, according to a global study. Researchers examined records for 17 snake populations covering 8 species over the last few decades and found that most had declined dramatically. For reasons that are not entirely clear, some populations shrank in number abruptly around 1998. I wonder what happened then. Writing in the journal Biology Letters, the researchers described the findings as alarming, but they say much more work is needed to understand the causes there. And by one recent estimate, Americans are spending a staggering $86 billion a year in care of aching backs, from MRIs to pain pills to nerve blocks to acupuncture. That research found little evidence that the population got better as the bill soared over the past decade. The reality, they say, is that time often is the best remedy. Most people will experience back pain at some point, but up to 90% will heal on their own within weeks. In fact, the run-of-the-mill cases, doctors aren't even supposed to do an X-ray or MRI unless the pain lingers for a month to 6 weeks. So just remember that. Two of Galileo's fingers, removed from his corpse by admirers in the 18th century, have gone on display in a Florence museum now named after the astronomer. The Museum of the History of Science had shut down for 2 years for renovations. It reopened, calling itself the Galileo Museum. Last year, the museum director announced that the thumb and little finger from Galileo's right hand had turned up at an auction and were recognized as being the fingers of the scientist who died in 1642. The digits are now on display in a slender glass case. Also on display is his tooth and a third finger already in the museum. In 1737, admirers of Galileo removed the three fingers plus the tooth and part of his vertebrae from his body as it was being moved from storage place to a monumental tomb opposite that of Michelangelo in Florence. Okay, up next, as promised, Captain Kelly Sweeney joins us as we talk about the BP oil spill. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Captain Kelly Sweeney is a master mariner who holds the highest captain's license that a merchant mariner can have. Kelly is the contributing editor of Pacific Maritime, one of the nation's leading maritime magazines. He has authored a book on authentic modern sea stories. The captain has served as an officer on nearly 40 ocean-going vessels and still goes to sea for a living. We have talked with him about piracy on the seas. And, of course, we've been talking to him nearly every night since this BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. And he's with us this entire hour on Coast to Coast AM, Captain Kelly Sweeney. I'm going to say ahoy first. How are you?
Ahoy, George, and thank you for having me back on.
Kelly, this situation where scientists are now saying that these oil hunks together under the sea are bigger than they thought, something that you talked about 3 weeks ago on this program. Seems like 3 months ago.
Yes, the as a matter of fact, George, I was talking with a buddy of mine who is on a research vessel, one of the ones that is investigating, the scientists are investigating how extensive these underwater plumes of oil are. And he told me, unofficially, they're frightened. The scientists are frightened about how bad it is under there because they really don't know.
And it could be devastating for the fish out there.
No question. One of the big concerns is that the all the oil underneath there is being voraciously eaten up by the bacteria. And while that's happening, which is a natural process, it's consuming the oxygen.
Now let's talk about the cleanup and the stopping, first of all, of the spill. They're talking about putting another cap on top of the other cap that they've already got, which obviously is not working. It's slowed it down somewhat, but not a lot. If anything, to me, it looks like when I look at some of the video, it's merely dissipating in other directions, Kelly. It doesn't look like it's slowed down at all.
Well, the report of how much has been taken, it was around 42,000 barrels, and there's a good chance that it's probably about half, and that's 42,000 barrels over the last, I think it was 4 days. So maybe about half or a little bit less than half. So they're having some success, but it isn't working like they hoped it worked, George.
No, not at all. Who's in charge of this disaster right now? Who's running the show?
Well, BP is paying the bills because they were the ones who caused it. But the Incident Command Center, and many people have seen him giving briefings, Admiral Thad Allen, he's the head of the Coast Guard. And I met Admiral Allen at various functions. He's a very well-known and well-respected individual. Yeah, he's the government's point man. So the government is supervising essentially what's going on. But BP is responsible for paying and doing, because the government really doesn't have the resources or, you know, the drilling experts, you know, and the equipment. BP does. But the government is there for oversight to make sure that everything that can reasonably be done is being done.
Isn't the problem, too, that when this all started, the oil that is spewing out of there is coming out at such a rapid pace that and the pressure is so high that they just can't seem to put anything in there to slow it down?
Yes, I think that definitely has been one of the big problems, and that's what caused the top kill to fail. The whole idea with that was that they were going to try to put enough weight coming down the other way and enough pressure with the heavy drilling fluid to try to offset the great amount of pressure in the oil coming up, and they just couldn't do it. It was kind of like plugging a hose that, you know, has a great amount of pressure with your hand, and it just starts squirting out the sides because you can't stop it.
I called a plumber friend of mine back in St. Louis, and I said, tell me about pressure. And he said, well, let me tell you what we do. If there's a broken pipe and water's shooting out of it, fortunately, we're lucky enough to have a shutoff valve somewhere. But if you don't, the thing we have to do is to try to put and solder a cap over this pipe. And once we do, and then we solder it and all is well. Now, that's assuming water's not squirting out, you know, making the solder, you know, render useless and everything else.
Right.
So they basically tried to do that here by popping this cap over it. Why didn't it work?
Well, I think one reason why is that your plumber friend didn't have to do it 5,000 feet below the surface.
That's true.
And he is able to use his hands, his expertise, to do it directly, whereas down below they're having to use mechanical arms on remotely operated vehicles. And it's just not, it's just not an easy gig, because I've seen scientists operating ROVs over volcanic vents and other underwater locations trying to pick up samples off the ocean floor. And they'd pick it up, and they had closed circuit TV so we could watch it up in the wheelhouse when it was going on. And the arm would go down and grab it and then drop it. And they'd pick it up and get almost there and drop it again. And so, I mean, it's very difficult for them to operate down at that depth. And so, and it's obvious. I mean, it took them a while to to get this cap on there. And unfortunately, it's not working as well as they hoped.
I would love to interview the person who's handling the robotics.
Well, I'm sure there's a number of them. I mean, at some count, they had 9 ROVs down there, remotely operated vehicles down there. And so there's a number of technicians up in the control rooms, up in those different vessels that are operating those vehicles.
Is there really any end in sight to this?
I tell you one thing, George. I have a buddy who is right now off the coast of Florida. He's a captain, and he's running a vessel cleanup operation. And he told me.
So he's right in the middle of all this.
He's right in the middle. And he told me, he goes, I just talked to him yesterday, and he told me, he said, Kelly, the Coast Guard is telling everybody down here that we can expect to be skimming on the surface for at least another year.
Oh, my God.
And that's just for what's happening now. They don't have this thing stopped. And so, I mean, that's just for what's come out so far.
All right. They've got to stop it first.
Yeah, I mean,
that to me is the major effort.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question that they've got to get this thing stopped and get under control. And the only thing that's going to do that for sure is the relief wells. And they're going to be 2 months down the road. And so
and still, that's not a guarantee, Kelly. They're going to work.
That's true, George. I mean, that's the best shot. And I would say that there's a good likelihood that it's going to work. But like, it's a long way off. And you're right. And it's not 100%.
So a relief valve is supposed to do what?
It's what it does is it basically it takes the oil will start coming up over there. It takes the pressure away from
instead of the other two.
Exactly, it takes it out of the from going out where it's spilling out now, and coming up outside.
How do we know it won't come out of all the tubes?
Well,
let's say they drill 2 relief valves, right? Two of them.
Right.
So now we have 3: the one that's leaking and the 2 that they put in. How do we know oil's not going to shoot out of all 3 of them?
I don't think they do know for sure. I mean, it's the best practice that they can do right now. And I'd say the best chance of it working is doing the relief wells. But even then, there's nothing that's 100% sure. There have been cases in the past where they tried to use a relief well to stop a spill, and it didn't work. And they had to keep doing it. There was a very, very large, huge spill in Mexico in the late 70s, and it took 6 relief wells before that thing, and almost a year before that was finally under control.
Hey, Kelly, what about all these animals? What about the pristine sand beaches down there? What's going to happen to all that?
Well, I tell you, George, I'm not a biologist, but it's bad news. But what I'm concerned about as a mariner is that it's not going to be just localized in the Gulf. I mean, we're talking about the loop current. We're talking about the Gulf Stream. And it's only, as far as I'm concerned, with the underwater plumes that they're talking about, huge lakes of oil underneath the water, it's only a matter of time. And my buddy on the research vessel has been confirming that the scientists are still studying it to get the data that they need to verify it for sure. But everybody is at this point convinced that it's in the loop current and it's being pulled towards the Gulf Stream. And if that's the case, the Gulf Stream goes very close to the coast. I mean, as it goes up the Atlantic side of Florida, up past Miami, like along by Fort Lauderdale and all the way, it's really close to shore. I mean, it's within, a mile or two. It's really close. And it's very close to the coastline as it goes all the way up, all the way to Cape Hatteras and North Carolina. And it will definitely, in my opinion, it's not a matter of if, but when. It's going to go right up there to Hatteras, and how far it'll go beyond, it's a good chance. There's a possibility it can go all the way up to New Jersey, New York. No doubt about that. You know, there's definitely a possibility.
We have really screwed around with Mother Nature this time, haven't we?
No, it's bad news, my friend. This is a real bad situation, and there are so many things that came out of the hearings in Louisiana, the Joint Coast Guard Minerals Management Service hearings. That the first set of hearings, or the previous set of hearings that were just concluded, basically talked to try to find out what happened, to get different people's version of what came down the night of the explosions and the fire that began all this. The next set of hearings that's coming up in July is going to focus on the how and the why, and there are many of us who are really waiting to see what's going to come down with that.
Well, you know what? To someone like you who has lived your life on the seas, this has really got to be upsetting.
You know, it really is, George. I know people who are connected with this side of the business. I know people who have friends who were officers on the Deepwater Horizon. And it's a terrible situation for the environment. It's terrible for the economy.
Well, Kelly, we're going to take some phone calls with you. We haven't done that in a very long time. So we'll open up the phone lines with Captain Kelly Sweeney next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Stanton Friedman joins us along with Kathleen Martin, who will join him a little bit later on. Science was wrong. That'll be our next Coast to Coast hour when we come back. And then we'll take your phone calls for the remaining half hour with Captain Kelly Sweeney right here on Coast to Coast AM. Kelly, Michael from Brooklyn, listening on WOR, fast blasts us and says, why can't we just, like a stent goes into an artery and expands when you release it, put in some kind of a thing in the tube that then opens up upon release and it blocks it?
Interesting. I don't know, George. I don't know why they haven't done that. I think maybe it would have to do with the pressure of it coming up. That was a kind of the idea that I think when they were trying that top kill was to have stuff go down the pipe and to force it down there and to force it with enough pressure to stop it, and it didn't. So I think maybe that's why. Is it just a great amount of pressure? But I really don't know for sure, but that's what I would think.
All right, let's go to Grants Pass in Oregon, west of the Rockies. Scott, we'll get you going here. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah, what I was wondering is rather than trying to stop it right there is trying to contain it there with like a curtain around it, and they could pump it out with those super tankers like they do, you know, when they have been doing it in the past in shallower water. If they could to put some type of heavy metal ring on the bottom and having spacers for so it won't collapse inside like they do on wells to keep the wires from hitting the pipes and stuff. You know, they're like X and they're made out of plastic and it keeps it open. And I don't know how far up that oil comes with pressure before it starts dispersing all over the place. It may not need to go down 5,000 feet. Do you know how far down it goes?
Well, the oil that is not contained starts dispersing not long after, you know, it comes
as soon as
out.
It starts up, it starts to disperse?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, is the area around the well cluttered with stuff, or would they be able to set a ring on the ground sand around the wellhead?
Well, there's a lot of debris in that around there, Scott. Mm-hmm. But there have been some people that have suggested something like a large, almost like a balloon that could have a siphon on the other end. And I'm sure the BP looked at that. I mean, they had a lot of different suggestions. And obviously, they haven't done it.
Kelly, it's 5,000 feet deep to the ocean surface floor. How far deep is the well? Into the earth from there.
I think I'm not 100% sure, George, but I think that the total that they had gone down was close to everything was around 18,000.
Oh my God!
And so I think they had a permit. The permit allowed them to go down to 21 total, and that includes, of course, you know, the depth of the water. And so they were. It's quite far down.
They have scarred the planet on this one.
It's a real bad situation. You know, George, I there's a lot of things that that mariners are talking about, and people are talking about, what can we do to stop this from happening again? And I think one of the first things, from my perspective, is to require that all these drilling rigs that are drilling in the U.S. Be registered U.S. flag and have U.S. mariners on board and be subject to U.S. Coast Guard inspections and U.S. law. There was a lot of people don't know this, but one of the big questions that came out of the hearings in Louisiana was who was in charge at the time this disaster began.
Kelly, they're not even protecting our borders. They're not going to do this.
Well, they have to do something, George, because business as usual is not going to cut it anymore.
I agree with that. Let's go to Glen Carbon, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Tim.
I had a a question. Before they went into this project, I'm sure, or at least I think I'm sure, that there were estimates of the volume of oil, of crude that was in this reserve. Do you have any idea? In other words, if they don't fix this thing, which they it looks like they're never going to be able to,
when does it run?
How much crude is going to ultimately be released? And you know, are we going to be destroying parts of the Atlantic Ocean? And
sure, if you believe in the abiotic oil theory, this thing could last almost indefinitely.
Okay, that's a terrible thought. I mean, that's a terrible thought. But how much for the actual? You know, they do what they do is that they when they do surveys, they have they put off explosives. They set them off at the bottom, and they kind of measure. They kind of track that. I have a friend who's a captain on a seismic ship that does this, and that's kind of how they have the. I mean, it's nothing more than an approximation of how much is underneath there. And so how much what they said for this actual lease, I don't know. But there are a number of other drilling rigs that are drilling in out of the same pool that the Deepwater Horizon was. It wasn't the only rig in that pool of oil. There's a number of others that were also drilling there right now.
All right, Tim, thanks for your call. Let's go to next. Wildcard line, Houston. Ernest, you're up.
George, Captain.
Boy, Ernest, I heard. Thank you.
I heard through the grapevine the blowout valve had a dead battery, and I heard maybe two or three men tried to use the hand crank to close that blowout valve. That's what rumors I heard. Now, a lot of two of my friends that were on that rig, they were afraid to go back to that rig. I mean, totally afraid. Now, what they're planning to do is, well, those two wells, they're going to go, one is going to go below the other.
Slant drilling?
Slant drilling, and they're going to hit one above the other. And one is going to suck the oil out, and the other one on top is going to fill it in with concrete and whatever else they can fill it in. They're going to try it.
I bet, Kelly, that BP's trying to figure out a way they can preserve that oil well.
Well, I don't think they've come out and said that they're going to, once they get this thing stopped, they're going to cap it and not go back in there, but just because.
You believe that?
Well, I think that, you know, they said it, so a lot of people are going to be watching to see if they do it. But it's interesting about that blowout preventer that because this was registered foreign in the Marshall Islands, the Marshall Islands administration hired third-party private contractors to do the inspections on the rig. And the blowout preventer, which is the thing that's supposed to stop, you know, it's a fail-safe, you know, if there's a problem, it's supposed to stop it. The last time that was inspected was in 2005, almost 5 years before this disaster occurred. And I personally believe that if it had been registered in the United States, you know, it would have been a year, you know, inspection. It would have been much more frequent, and maybe even more than that. You know, 5 years, 2005 was the last time that it was physically inspected.
Let's go to Sacramento. Bob's up with us, first-time caller. Hi, Bob.
Hi, George. I have a question for Captain Sweeney.
Yes.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I'll tell you, Captain Sweeney, I'm worried that no one's even confronting the greatest potential of damage that this can bring about. I've heard no one discuss it, no one bring up. They keep talking about the fisheries and the swamps and the meadows and maybe ruining the beaches in Delaware or North Carolina or something. But I think there's a much worse fate if this thing is not tapped soon. And that is that I've read many times, I'm not a scientist or anything, although I am degreed in engineering, but it seems to me, well, I've read many times that when the Arctic ice melts, for example, and I've heard another theory that there was actually an extra Great Lake once, and then an earthquake broke it, and all that fresh water ran into the Gulf Stream, that when that pure water, because of the different viscosity it has versus the salt, it changes the ratio of fresh water to salt. Now, if this oil with its viscosity gets caught into the jet stream, I fear that it will bring an ice age on within months.
Wow.
Now, I wonder, now, the reason I mention this is because I don't hear it being discussed, and yet I know you must have access to the people where you can bring this up.
Well, that's certainly very interesting and kind of a worrisome, more than a worrisome thought about the, having it get caught in the Gulf Stream.
We would have to have more oil spill, and I think this would have to go on for months, months, and months before we'd see it affect the climate. But he is right. If something affects the currents we go into the El Nino, El Nina stage again, who knows what could happen?
Well, one thing that they are admitting is that it's very likely that the oil in the Gulf that's on top, you know, in the surface, is going to affect hurricane season because of just what he's talking about, the change of the temperature and it's affecting the water, which of course is one of the factors for how hurricanes move, the Gulf Stream, affected by the Gulf Stream, that the oil on top is definitely going to have an effect on the hurricane in the hurricane season. And so that's definitely one of the wild cards. So there's something to that.
Let's go to Indianapolis, Indiana. Andrew on the wild card line. Good morning, Andrew.
Hey.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Hi, Mr. Sweeney. I had a question for you about what this oil industry insider that actually finances these oil companies, Mr. Matt Simmons, had to say, that he thinks the wellbore is actually pierced and that there could be oil leaking up through the actual sediment up to 5 or 6 miles away.
That's horrible.
Well, I think that...
I haven't heard that.
I think I've heard various scenarios, and I've also heard that was one of the reasons why people who were thinking about having explosion to just flatten that down, because of the great pressure that it might seal it, but it would come up elsewhere because of the great pressure. It would find a way to come up. So I hate to say it, but there've been rumors, and nobody's been able that I know have been able to substantiate it that there are two leaks. At least, not just this one here, but another one. But I haven't been able to substantiate it. But I've been looking all over to try to find if I can get the answer.
Monumental disaster.
Terrible disaster.
Montebello, California. It's Sanchez, west of the Rockies. Hi, Sanchez.
Hey, good evening, George, and good evening to you. Ahoy, Captain.
Ahoy, Sanchez. Thank you for being on.
Yes, you were just mentioning about a second leak, and I'm wondering if you happen to know anything about a possible third leak. This would be happening about 38 miles away from the Deepwater Horizon. It's a drilling rig. It's called the Ocean Saratoga, and apparently, according to news reports, it's been leaking since at least April 30th. This is according to a federal document. Now, what's been happening since April 30th, they've been pouring the dispersants, and it's been mixing with the oil, and now there's an oil plume, a toxic 10-mile-long oil plume from this Ocean Saratoga rig, and it's now headed for the mouth of the Mississippi River. I'm wondering, do you happen to have any background information on this? Because there seems to be two conflicting reports about this evening. Somebody was saying that this is a damaged rig from, say, a few years ago, and they're just repairing it. And other people, according to one watchdog organization called Sky Truth, they're saying that this is a new leak. So I'm just wondering if you have any information on that, Captain.
Well, I have heard and read, Sanchez, that exactly what you're talking about, that they had some satellite imagery photography that was taken. And it revealed, and this was some weeks ago, that there was a second leak, just like you were saying. Now, whether it was an old one or new one, I haven't heard verified. But I think that you're on the right track, that I have also seen reports about that, too. And I'm very interested, like everybody else, to find out what's happening over there.
Tom texts us, sends a text from Pennsylvania, wants to know if you could just weld a pipe down there. I don't think you can you?
Well, I think that if they could, they would have, and I don't think that the fact that they haven't done it means it's probably not doable.
No.
Or not viable.
Memphis, Tennessee. Al, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Boy, Al.
Yeah, a couple of important points. Number one, I hear all these solutions. What I've heard, and I believe is the truth, is that after they tried the top kill, the pressure readings told them that this borehole is unstable. They're afraid to put a valve on it, because if they put a valve on it and close it up, the oil, at this point, they think they're going to further fracture the hole, and the oil is just going to come bellowing up around the valve.
I've heard that, too. As a matter of fact, that was one of the things that, prior to that, why the BP engineers were concern is that the walls of the well were, they felt, were unstable, and they were trying to find that right balance between having that top kill be successful, having enough pressure, and you're not having so much that it would cause, I mean, a problem that couldn't be fixed at all. You're absolutely right, I believe.
Kelly, apparently there is a second spill. This is at what is called the Ocean Saratoga rig, which is in the Gulf, and this occurred during Hurricane Ivan in 2004. The company has been trying to fix it for 6 years.
Oh, my God.
They haven't been able to.
That's terrible. That's terrible, George. Well, you know, business as usual is not going to go. I mean, what's been happening in the past is obviously not going to happen in the future. I'm concerned about the mariners and the people who are cleaning up the spill with the use of all the dispersants, and oil is toxic by itself, and you know, just the way the inspections have been on these rigs. I mean, you know, there were preventive maintenance and very important on very important emergency equipment that hadn't been done in 6 months or more on this rig. And, you know, that's just not going to be allowed to continue, in my opinion. It can't be allowed to continue.
Fishing industry down there, devastated.
Devastated, I agree.
Let's go to La Grande, Oregon. Johnny, go ahead.
Yeah, George.
Thank you. All right, Johnny.
Well, yes, I think I got an idea. I don't know to how to stop that leak, is to take pipe casing, and I'm not sure how, if it's 5,000 deep, just keep welding it down or screwing it together 2 to 4 inches less than what the diameter of the pipe is there, drop that down into the hole with a casing larger than the existing pipe around that where they want to stop it, and the weight of the pipe would stop the keep the from pushing the pipe back up, and then they could attach whatever they wanted to shut that down, and even put a rubber stopper in that outside ring of pipe that goes on the outside of the existing pipe. You see what I'm saying? Like a stopper deal.
Is the pressure too tough, where it just too strong, where even a pipe would get blown out of it like a bullet?
Not 5,000 feet of pipe. They could drop that in that hole like nothing.
Hmm.
Just the weight of the pipe, a half-inch pipe. I'm not sure, because I've been in the welding business for years.
And just keep weighing it down.
Just keep. You know, put 5,000 foot of pipe together, take 3 or 4 cranes, whatever they've got to do, to center it across that hole, drop it directly into that hole, and then as far down that hole they want to go, have another casing of the existing pipe that's there welded around with gussets on the top of it so it can't break it off all the way around it, and drop it right over the top of that hole, and then they can put a valve to shut it off or pump oil till they can come up with a permanent fix.
Kelly, sounds like we're getting better ideas than what BP's coming up with.
I tell you, that's a very interesting idea. You should send that over to them and see what they say.
I don't think they're listening to anybody.
Well, I know they have, supposedly on the website, you know, they've had thousands and tens of thousands of suggestions, George, but who knows what they're listening to and what they're not. I know people that have had some great ideas, and actually a number of listeners who've contacted me and sent their ideas over to BP, and they always get a standard email back. Hey, thanks. And
yeah, exactly. What about oil-eating microbes? Too much oil out there?
Well, I think that, that's what's happening down at below the surface right now, is the bacteria is eating that. And that's a natural process that occurs, but maybe there's so much that I think that's what the concern is, that it's gobbling up all the oxygen, which is not and leaving enough left for all the other living things there. I think that's what the concern is.
All right, Kelly, thanks so much. Again, we'll keep checking back with you on this disastrous situation in the Gulf of Mexico. When we come back in just a moment, Stanton Friedman joins us. Later on, Kathleen Martin, their newest work, Science Was Wrong. That's next.